What is up? It is me, George G. We've got another awesome episode of the Align Money Show featuring Ben Carlson. Ben is a CFA and the Director of Institutional Asset Management at Ritholtz Wealth Management. We talked about some of the ideas and research and thinking behind his newest book, Risk and Reward. We talked about how people need to be careful about blind spots that we all have. We talked about the importance of understanding your risk profile and time horizon. We talked about how two people who look really, really similar on paper can make completely different decisions financially and how obviously that will impact where they end up in the end. We talked about the most common and most important question that Ben and his partners get and how to best answer it. And then, of course, we closed with a great difference-making tip. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Ben, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Okay, one truth. I was on the Bozo the Clown show when I was 7 years old.
Nice.
Another one, I was attacked by a cactus the last time I was in Arizona.
Oof.
Okay, and the third one is in college, to have beer money, I was a skydiving instructor.
Okay, all right. My goodness, Bozo the Clown. Well, you know what? Looking back, that could have been a dangerous activity, but you're out in the desert potentially getting attacked by cactuses and you're jumping out of airplanes, which brings us to current day. You're writing a book, or you wrote a book called Risk and Reward. So each one of those things, and I guess everything in life, we're trying to balance all those things. So which one is not in fact true? Oh, man. I bet you were not a skydiving instructor in college.
Yeah, that's true. I've always wanted to go skydiving. Never done. I did actually get attacked by a cactus when I was in Phoenix.
Were you golfing and your ball went astray or what?
My son, who's 9 years old, was infatuated with them and went off the trail on a hike, and I went to go get him. And next thing I know, there's a cactus in my leg.
Just like that.
Yep.
Bozo the Clown. Can I find this clip somewhere on the internet?
Boy, I wish it was, you know. I did the thing where you throw the little ping pong ball into the balls and I won a bunch of stuff. And yes, great childhood memory.
Okay, awesome. So I'm sure that you've had ample opportunity to jump out of airplanes. You've just, that's not something.
It's on my list.
Hmm. Okay, all right. It's pretty risky.
I'm a balanced person. How's that?
Okay. Good, 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 good. All right. All right. Well, off to a good start, Ben Carlson. What is top of mind for you right now?
Let's see. A lot of conversations on the book recently. I really like getting feedback from people, talking to people and hearing different people's definition of risk, because it's interesting. Everyone is different. When I first got into the investing game, I felt like I'm going to show everyone that there's one way to invest. And then I realized, like, wait a minute, that's impossible. We're all human. Everyone is different. People approach the world differently. People are built differently. Their emotions, their feelings, their experiences in life. And so it's just interesting to me to hear from people their feedback on the idea of this and their thinking behind it.
And is there oftentimes thinking behind it, or are we just sort of emotional creatures finding our way?
A lot of it is the emotional side of things. So I think that's step one, is like understanding what are the emotions that are going to pull on you the worst, right? What's your lesser self? For some people, I found it's, you know, if they lose money, they're not going to be able to sleep at night. And other people, it's if they're not taking part in the boom times and investing in aggressive stuff that's going up, then that's going to kill them, right? So I think it's about kind of knowing and understanding yourself. And then the experience piece is another one. We have a client who was working for Lehman Brothers in 2008 and lost 60% of his net worth basically in the span of a month or so. And he admits, like, listen, I'm a more conservative investor because I lived that experience. I know it's irrational and it's not optimized based on my circumstances and my time horizon and risk profile, but I don't care because I lived that experience and it changed me forever. So I think there's also times like that can change a person's outlook on risk and life.
Well, it certainly makes sense. Your lesser self, build on that a little bit for me.
It's funny because there's all these behavioral biases that most people know now, hindsight bias and recency bias and all these different things. There's the fear of missing out. There's all these things. People always ask me, like, what's the one risk, if you had to summarize it, that everyone falls prey to? And I say, it's probably just the blind spot risk. Like, you don't see your own blind spots, right? Because again, everyone has their own thing that is going to get them in the end. And I think it's about being honest with yourself and recognizing, like, what is that thing for you? For me, it's I don't want to make decisions when emotions are high. So when the euphoria is running high or the fear is running high, that's not when I want to pull myself out of that situation. Excuse me. So I want technology to help me. I want to like automate good decisions. I don't want to have to be, because most of the time, if I would go back and look at myself honestly, when I was doing things that were automated, making good decisions ahead of time, most of the time my discretionary feelings would have been like, this is the wrong decision. What am I doing? Now is not the time to buy stocks. This feels like the worst time. But those are often the best times. So I have to like force myself. So I think for people, it's determining like, what is it for you? What's the trigger point for you that's going to cause you to make mistakes and make the wrong decisions?
Well, I love everything about that. Not that we all have that and that it will all eventually get us, but I was literally just listening to a podcast this morning and they were talking about, the enemy within that's going to get you. And it could be alcohol, it could be, gambling, it could be, food, and being able to recognize that and notice when it is that we're falling prey and to kind of stop ourselves. Just that's an important skill that not many of us have because it's a blind spot.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, it's way easier to see it in other people than it is seeing it in yourself.
So what is the first step in kind of identifying ours?
Well, so like the first thing I'd say to anyone who's building an investment portfolio is the two things that matter the most are your risk profile and your time horizon, right? How long are you investing for? That's step one. When am I going to need to spend this money? Step two is the risk profile, which is there's three things that determine how you can handle risk. So there's your willingness, your need, and ability to take risk. Okay. So your need to take risk is basically what is the expected return you need on your investments? What is your savings rate that you need to get? What nest egg do you need to build to reach your financial goals, right? That's your need to take risk. Your ability to take risk is kind of where are you right now? What's your net worth? How much money do you make? How much are you saving? How much are your investments growing? Those two are pretty easy to like put a number on, right? Those are spreadsheet answers. Those are pretty easy for everyone. The hard one is the willingness to take risk, right? Because you could have the ability to take risk. You could be really wealthy, right? You just sold a business for $10 million. You're sitting on a huge nest egg. So you have the ability to take risk. You might not need to take risk. So it comes down to, do you want to? What's your appetite for risk? Do you want to build that to a huge number, or are you happy with that just being in conservative investments? And the truth is, there is no really right or wrong answer. And I say that almost every financial decision boils down to trade-offs, right? What are you willing to give up in order to get what you want? What are you going to regret more? Putting this thing at risk and maybe losing it, or not taking enough risk and not building it up to a high level. So the hard part is a lot of the big financial decisions are qualitative, and there is no easy answer. It's not black or white. It's a shade of gray.
Right. No solutions, only trade-offs.
Yes, exactly. And I think investing itself is a form of regret minimization. What am I going to regret more? Taking a lot of risk and potentially losing money, or not taking enough risk and missing out on gains? And there's a middle ground there, obviously, for some people, and there's balance required. But I think that's the idea. That's like the framework you want to think through when trying to make these decisions.
That's interesting. Somebody sells a business, they've got $10 million sitting there, theoretically speaking, set for the rest of their life. But what could be if you were to put that to work at a small rate of return or a small lower potential risk, and it could grow by 4% a year, or you could really go and take bigger swings and
Oh,
try to get
sorry.
10%.
Sorry, George. I actually have a package here, real quick. I gotta sign for. Give me a
Sure.
sec. Sorry about that. The FedEx guy just walked in. All right.
No worries.
Sorry. My bad. Keep going.
So just to go back to that sort of fact pattern, if somebody sells a business, they've got $10 million, they're theoretically speaking set for life. It's never as simple as it's fear of losing this and not being secure or being greedy and saying, well, I could turn this into $100 million.
Yeah, it's interesting because the wealthy people that we work with, the ultra wealthy people, right? They're sometimes the hardest people to give advice to because they can put their money in probably anything and they'd be fine. It's funny, there's two billionaire families in the town that I'm from in Michigan, and I worked for one of them. And they founded a company that made them both billionaires, and they started it together in high school. And one of them took the money and went as risky as possible, right? All the money went into private equity and venture capital and these high octane, let's build it as high as the sky. And the other one took the money and put it into US government bonds and said, I have all this money. I don't want to get rich twice. I'm going to keep it conservative. Now, you give that scenario to, a group of 100 people, how many people are going to say, I'll go with choice A or I'll go with choice B? And the thing is, you're both right or you're both wrong, right? Neither of them is right or wrong. And so it's a personal preference thing. And I think that's the hard part for people, that you have to like actually kind of make a decision, right? Because you could get trapped in this paralysis by analysis and not do anything. And so at a certain point, you have to just say, all right, this is the route we're taking. This might not be the perfect route, but I say that perfect is often the enemy of good in making these 10 decisions. Sometimes you just have to say, like, listen, I don't know what the future is going to hold. We have to do something. The alternative is doing nothing. We know what that route is. Nothing happens. You lose to inflation.
Trying to find just right, trying to find optimal.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I like to say that like the good strategy you can stick with is way better than the optimal strategy that you can't stick with. There could be an optimal strategy for you that say, listen, I take everything of you. Here's your age, here's your net worth, here's like how long you're investing for, all these things I put into a computer and it spits out, here's what you should invest in. And you kind of go, I can't sleep at night with that though. And you go, okay, maybe the optimal thing is not the right one. Maybe the suboptimal one that you can stick with, that's the thing. And that's the hard part that you have to admit, like, okay, there is no like holy grail here, perfect thing for me. I have to go with, I call it like horseshoes and hand grenades, right? Close enough. That's probably best for most people. Just get close enough and then stop worrying so much.
I really like that saying, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, because we can totally get ourselves so twisted up and or paralysis by analysis and all that, so I don't do anything at all, and sometimes that is the biggest risk, just inaction.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can have that logical conversation and we can have all the spreadsheets and outputs in the world. But it is really just going to, or are there a series of questions that you like to ask, saying, if we're sitting here 3 years from today and your portfolio is up by 25%, how does that feel? Or it's down 25%, how does that feel? Are there certain questions that you like to ask just to get people in that headspace of let's address the emotions and the fears or the greed?
Yes. There's a lot of examples like that, scenario analysis. And so a big one that we deal with all the time is like someone has a lump sum of cash. It could be like we said before, they sold a business, they get a bunch of money, or they got a bunch of stock options from their company and they need to sell them and do something with it. So they're sitting on cash for some reason, and it's a big amount. And we say, like, what's going to matter more to you, the facts or the feelings? So we say, if the facts say most of the time the stock market goes up, but sometimes it goes down. Like if you look historically, over the last 75 years or so, 80% of all 1 year periods, the stock market is up a year from now. Start any day, 80% of the time that's up. Go to any casino in the world and you take those odds any day of the week, right?
For sure.
80%, that's a great baseline. But most people go, yeah, but what if I'm part of the 20%? What if I put this money to work now and tomorrow we fall off a cliff, Wile E. Coyote style, right? What if that happens to me and I just have bad luck? And you go, okay. And some people immediately latch onto the numbers. Oh, yes, I would take those probabilities all day long. If I'm wrong, so what? At least I went with the probabilities and I went with the baselines. Other people go, I can't do it. I need to just leg into the position and I need to dollar cost average a little bit each month or each week or each quarter, whatever it is. And I know that the market could get away from me, but this is my way of managing risk. And we always tell people, like, again, there is no true right or wrong answer here. You have to go what you can stick with. But if you're going to do that second option, the more feelings option, let's write a plan down in advance and stick with it and not change our minds after the fact, and be outcome based, like be process based, and do it because this is what you think is going to help you put the money back to work instead of just sitting on it, like you said, and having inaction and doing nothing.
Just because I'm 25 doesn't mean I should be super aggressive. Just because I'm 65 doesn't mean I should be conservative. It's what I can sleep with and be comfortable with.
Yes, exactly. And this is, again, something that I probably changed my mind about. I would have, if you'd asked me this 15 years ago, I said, you're nuts. Every 25-year-old should be as aggressive as humanly possible. And most of them should and probably are. But some people just say, they look themselves in the mirror and they say, ah, I can't with the stock market. I can't do it. It's too much for me. I need to have some cash in my account or fixed income or something that's going to help me leave the rest of it alone. That's okay, I think, as long as you can understand the trade-offs.
Is today the same as it's always been?
In some ways, yes. Human nature is the one constant across market environments, right? That's a thing that never changes. Technology changes, our knowledge of the markets change, the markets themselves are constantly updating. Like, things move way faster than they did in the past today. That's a fact thing. The speed of information, the speed of processing ability for the markets, there's more computers, there's all this stuff. That stuff is all totally different. The number of people who are invested in the stock market, everything's more financialized, totally different than it was in the past. If you look how the stock market used to function, but the emotions, those are the same. So those are the things that are never going to change. People are always probably going to get too high and too low, and the pendulum's going to swing back and forth. And those emotions, that I always say that emotions aren't good or bad. They just are. It's like what just makes us human. So you just have to learn to build a process that deals with them in some way.
We have, so everything you just said, speed of the market, more participants, more things to invest in, crypto, and who knows what's going to be coming up next, NFTs, if that's still a thing, you sort of get the idea of where I'm going. For an ordinary investor, is that of value to examine everything? Is it just too much? Depends.
It's interesting. It's a double-edged sword today. It's never been a better time to be an individual investor than today. The access you have to strategies and investments that would have been unthinkable 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's kind of mind-boggling. And you have them, these like tax-efficient wrappers, and the fees are lower, right? There's $0 fees. When I first went to invest in a Vanguard mutual fund out of college, they had a $3,000 minimum. And I said, I don't have $3,000. I said, all right, we'll save it up. And now you can invest almost, there's no minimums, there's no fees. So the barriers to entry have been completely knocked down. The problem is the temptation to invest in everything. Like you're at a never-ending buffet and you can just keep filling your plate up. And oh, I want some of that and maybe a little of this. And so I think the fire hose that you're drinking out of, you have to have some limitations on it and you have to have some filters and say, like, that may be a good investment for someone else, but it doesn't fit my plan. Like, I'm going to limit myself to these certain investments in these asset classes or these fund types. You have to have some limitations on your process, or you'll just go crazy constantly thinking about, like, gosh, why didn't I invest in this? Why didn't I move my money here? I should have done this. And you're fighting the last war constantly. So, yeah, you need more filters and limitations and guidelines than ever before.
And in order to do that on my own, if I'm a DIY kind of a person, I'm probably intellectually capable of doing that, of seeking out the videos and the blogs, the podcasts, but I just have to really want to do that. I have to have the desire.
Yeah. So one of my favorite authors, William Bernstein, said there's four tributes. Four attributes every investor needs to be successful. And you have to have some sort of math horsepower. You have to understand market history. You have to understand your emotions. But then the other one is you have to have an interest in the process. And some people just don't, right? You're like, they could have the intellectual horsepower, But hey, I have other stuff going on. I have family, I have my job, I have fantasy football or my basketball league, whatever it is. I don't want to spend all my days watching the market. I'm going to outsource it to someone else. But for the DIY people out there, yeah, the resources are as good as they've ever been. And with the advent of AI, people, you don't have to feel stupid asking a question anymore. You can go into the LLM and ask questions. And so I actually think, yeah, the DIY investor is in great shape. It's just, are you going to be okay with the decisions you make? That's the hard part. The biggest question that we answer for our wealth management clients, for everyone, regardless of their size, we work with people from, tens of thousands of dollars to billionaires, is just, am I going to be okay? If I make this decision, am I going to be okay? Some people still need reassurance that, like, this is the right decision. This is going to make sense. You have my back. I can do it. And other people, like you said, just want to outsource their time and do other stuff because it's too much of a brain drain.
Am I going to be okay? It's the most logical and reasonable and smartest question that 99% of human beings will ask. Probably just psychopaths or sociopaths or absolute narcissists don't ask that question.
Yes, right. Yeah. And it's like, if I make this decision, am I going to be all right? Is my financial planning going to be impacted? Am I still on track to reach my goals? Those are the things you have to work with that we work with clients. That's why I always say that investment and financial planning is not an event. You don't do it once and hey, here's this binder, go follow it. It's a process because you have to be flexible with it and make changes over time. This happened, so we're going to do this. Oh, this was better than we expected. Now what can we do? Oh, this is way worse than expected. What do we have to change now? And that's the process you go through.
So when somebody picks up a copy of Risk and Reward, what are you hoping that they will get out of it?
Great question. I hope that they understand the internal trade-offs that they're making when they make financial decisions. I hope that they better understand their risk profile and time horizon. I think it's never been easier to confuse your risk profile and time horizon with someone else's, and make it be, well, look at what that person is doing. Look at how much money they made. Look at the investments they made without understanding, what they internally went through. So I really think it's about understanding not only the financial market history of the last 100 years. That's a big thing for me, is understanding the history, but it's also the behavioral component. Understanding that behavioral component, that's the big thing that really matters. It's really easy to look back at a chart and the wiggles on the chart and go, oh, I would have bought then. That was simple, right? Anyone could have done that. But when you're in the moment, that's when it really matters, right? And you have that, irreducible uncertainty about the future. No one knows what's going to happen. The 2020s are a perfect example. All the things that have happened this decade that no one could have possibly foreseen. And so I think you just have to learn how to deal with that. And I think that's what the study of market history shows us, that there's always surprises. And it's never, no two environments are ever the same.
Irreducible uncertainty. Those are two beautiful words put together right there. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's funny because I think everyone always thinks that the current time frame is the most uncertain we've ever lived through. But it's always like that. No one ever knows what the future is going to hold.
It always seems like it is the scariest time, and it probably is, but tomorrow will also be the scariest time, and the next day, and the next day. So.
Yes, it's always at an all-time high.
It's always at an all-time high. Am I going to be okay? It takes courage to ask that question and it takes intelligence to be able to listen and actually take advice.
Yeah, you're right. And a lot of time it is understanding, like, there are some things out there that I just don't know. And do I need to find them out myself? Do I need to get help from them? I've been studying the markets for 20 years, and every year there's something I learned that I just didn't know. And there's never like a finish line where it's like, all right, I have the markets completely figured out, right? I've got it. I nailed it. There's no more work to be done. And I think that's okay.
That's pretty extraordinary. And it's exciting, frustrating, just is that you're
Yes,
going to learn
all of those
something
things.
new
Yes.
all the
Yeah,
time.
but that's why I like the markets too, because it's fascinating. And the biggest thing to me is not the numbers that I love the numbers. I love my whole book's full of charts and graphs and all that. I love crunching that stuff and using it to provide context. But the markets are also this big laboratory for human emotions. And that's the part of it that will almost always surprise you, is like how people react to things.
Yeah. What fun would it be without the people, Ben? If it's just all computers, that's no fun. So,
And we're going to be controlling the robots too, so there'll still be emotions involved, even if the AI is running everything for us, huh?
yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed. We've already given us a lot, Ben, but we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
All right. Three biggest words for me is less is more. I think, like I said, the fire hose is just going to get stronger in the future. The content and analysis and the research and the social media posts and all that stuff, with the advent of AI, it's not going to like slow down. And so I think you need to figure out ways to slow yourself down. And I think less is more. Simple beats complex. You just have to kind of take a deep breath every once in a while and remember that.
Well, I think that that is great stuff. That definitely gets, come on, less is more. Push yourself back from the table. Put the fork down. Put the phone down. Stop consuming more. Just because there's more doesn't mean you should be consuming it. I love it. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you? Where can they get their copy of Risk and Reward?
Yeah, the books everywhere, Barnes and Nobles, Amazon. I did the audiobook myself, actually, so you can hear my voice if you want to. Wealthofcommonsense.com is my website. You can sign up for my newsletter there. And yeah, I write about the markets and behavior and all that stuff all the time.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Ben your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Pick up your copy of Risk and Reward wherever you buy your books and go to Wealth of Common Sense and learn more about Ben and crawl inside of his head and get all of his musings and experience of decades of work. I will certainly link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Ben.
Appreciate it.
Finally, friendly reminder, there's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.